From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, Hong Kong may never be the same. Despite international opposition, China's parliament has passed a national security legislation which severely curtails freedoms for the citizens of Hong Kong. We'll talk about it in just a moment with Gordon Chang, author of The Coming Collapse of China. And speaking of China, the communist regime of China is taking draconian measures to slash birth rates among Uyghurs and other religious minorities through the use of forced birth control, sterilization, and abortion. Nuri Turkle, a Uyghur who serves on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, joins me with more. Whatever happened to the criminal referrals Congress made to the Department of Justice over Planned Parenthood's trafficking in baby body parts? That's what South Carolina Congressman Ralph Norman is asking. He joins us later here on Washington Watch. In a rush to accuse President Trump of ignoring reports of Russian bounties on U.S. troops in Afghanistan, the New York Times jeopardized an ongoing investigation that has led one lawmaker to say the New York Times has blood on its hands. Congressman Jim Banks joins us later here on Washington Watch. And finally, the U.S. Supreme Court handed down a favorable decision in a religious freedom case out of Montana. At issue is a tax credit scholarship that allowed parents to choose religious schools for their children. Jeff Laslawley, president of the Montana Family Foundation, is here to explain the significance of this decision. The website, TonyPerkins.com, lots of resources there for you. If you happen to miss last night's A Rise and Stand event, you can find out more. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Also, if you're on social media, if you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. But if you've joined me over at Parler, it's also at T Perkins. All right. With the passage and implementation of China's national security law for Hong Kong, many are predicting the outpost of democracy will quickly be absorbed by communist China. But the question is, will China's breach of its agreement with Britain, allowing a one-country, two-system policy for 50 years, come with consequences? Joining me now to talk about this is China expert, political pundit, and author of The Coming Collapse of China, Gordon Chang. And you can follow him at Gordon G. Chang on Twitter. Gordon, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Tony.
No big surprise that this law has gone into effect. I assume this is China's way of trying to clamp down on the democracy protest in a bloodless way.
Yes, and it's also China's attempt to completely control Hong Kong. So Hong Kong right now, for all intents and purposes, is just part of the mainland. There's no high degree of autonomy, no one country, two systems. Everything that was promised in the Sino-British Joint Declaration of 1984, which is an enforceable treaty, that's no longer available either. So this is really just China's fully absorbing Hong Kong.
I mean, what are the ramifications here, Gordon, if the international community, I mean, obviously this agreement was with Britain, a 50-year agreement for a one-system, a one-country, two-system arrangement. We're 23 years into this, not even half at the halfway point. What happens from here?
Well, first of all, the United States is withdrawing special privileges which were accorded to Hong Kong because we assumed that the place was run autonomously. So, for instance, in licensing of dual use equipment, that is no longer going to be a privilege for Hong Kong. But I think that there is going to be other issues and other costs that will be imposed on China. So, for instance, we could see Chinese banks lose their privileges to their dollar accounts in New York. A number of other things will occur, and there will be visa restrictions on officials who helped reduce or eliminate Hong Kong's autonomy.
What are we seeing in terms of those that have been advocating for democracy, who have been the voices of those in Hong Kong, you know, wanting to protect their freedom? What are they? How are they reacting to this?
Well, many people have canceled their Twitter accounts because they're afraid of China looking into them. Joshua Wong, who has been a leader of protests, actually left his group, and that group just immediately disbanded afterwards. So we are seeing pro-democracy forces actually just sort of try to blend in right now, try to avoid what China's going to do, because many people do fear something that they call Operation Thunderbolt, which is that immediately upon China taking over Hong Kong, they will start to round up hundreds, maybe even thousands of people and ship them off to mainland courts. I don't know if China will actually do it, but that has really frightened many people in Hong Kong.
Now, a part of that is the expectation, I assume, that Beijing is going to set up a national security office in Hong Kong, which would be for the first time. They could reportedly exercise jurisdiction in certain cases. So the long arm of China just got a little bit longer.
Well, it certainly did, because under the national security law, a couple things. First of all, people can be sent over into the mainland to be tried there, and that's really within China's discretion. There are no limits on it when you look at the language of the national security law. Also, there is long-arm jurisdiction in the sense that foreigners talking about Hong Kong violate the national security law. So they shouldn't be going into Hong Kong afterwards. And indeed, if they go to a country which has an extradition treaty with China, they could find themselves hauled into China. So this is really quite breathtaking in the scope.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Gordon Chang, my guest. You can follow Gordon at Gordon G. Chang on Twitter. I mean, I know that, you know, it's not new that a treaty, international agreement would be broken, but normally it comes with consequences. Now, you talked about the United States taking certain economic actions, but, I mean, this, I guess it's troubling in the fact that here, not that we should be surprised that China's not good for their word, but I just think this is a lot bigger than I think people realize.
Yes, it is, Tony. And really what's happening is this is occurring against the backdrop of anger over other things. So, for instance, the spread of the coronavirus disease. Also, you have the killing of 20 Indian soldiers on June 15th. So in India, there is an anti-Communist Party movement. And, of course, in the United States, we have seen a new appreciation of just how evil China can be. So this Hong Kong national security legislation comes in this backdrop of all sorts of things Beijing has been doing recently.
You know, we've had a number of lawmakers on, and there's a number of pieces of legislation running from, you know, addressing the issue of the coronavirus to trade practices to the Hong Kong issue. I mean, it's all kind of there's this convergence of issues. But the American public is, I'm going to, you know, I may get some criticism for this, but almost addicted to cheap Chinese goods. And I think the American consumer is going to have to take action here to, in part, hold accountable China simply by their purchasing and where they spend their money.
Yes. Well, it's up to a number of different parties. So, for instance, it is up to the American consumer. Also, it's up to the Trump administration to change the incentives for big box retailers to favor China over domestic producers. So there's a lot of parties here that can actually change their behavior. And we got to work on all of them because we're seeing China, this unprecedented attack, not just on Hong Kong or not just on India, but also the United States as well. Because we got to remember, 129,000 deaths of Americans due to coronavirus.
Right. Right. And we're going to talk in just a moment on their forced birth control policies on religious minorities, including Uyghurs. Let me go back to what you just said, Gordon Chang, about the administration and what they can do with the big box stores. Because, you know, the first one that comes to mind is Walmart. I remember when Sam Walton, you know, ran the company, you couldn't find anything in the store that didn't say made in the USA. Now you're hard-pressed to find something that says made in the USA. What can the administration do to put pressure on the big box stores to favor American producers, manufacturers over those in China?
Well, especially if China doesn't adhere to its obligations under the Phase One trade deal that was signed January 15th, then President Trump should raise the tariffs he's imposed under Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974 as a remedy for the theft of U.S. intellectual property. You start raising the tariffs, it means that big box retailers have got to go source elsewhere, because then it becomes more competitive. And also, I think that we need to have much more rigorous inspections on goods coming from China because of essentially the slave labor. Uyghurs, for instance, mm-hmm. and you'll be talking to Nuri Turkel, you know, they've been transported around China to make goods under forced labor conditions. That's completely unacceptable. Cannot come into the U.S.
Yeah. And in the hypocrisy of some of the American companies that are using and benefiting from that slave labor, but yet here in the United States picking up the banner of social justice is the hypocrisy is striking. I want to ask you one final question. I know you're a straight shooter and you've been complimentary of the administration. Are they still on the right track as it pertains to China?
I think that, generally speaking, they're on the right track. On a number of very important issues, the administration is going after China, as they should. Now, there are other things, though, that China's still getting a free pass on. And, of course, I think, in general, the administration needs to come to the conclusion that there is not possible to coexist with China. That's not the political consensus yet in the United States, but we're moving there as China pushes us in very dangerous directions. So
What are they giving up? What are they giving them pass on? What areas we need to focus on?
I still think trade is critical. We're allowing a lot of goods into the U.S., which we shouldn't be. We should be inspecting much more rigorously. And indeed, when it comes to the coronavirus, we need to come to the conclusion that China deliberately spread this disease beyond its borders. That's killed Americans. That has to have consequences. And I know that this is very difficult, but we need to do that. And the other thing is, I believe that we need to go after, for instance, the Chinese ambassador to the U.S., who was engaged in surreptitiously recruiting researchers for China. The reason why, I don't understand why he's still in the U.S. He should have been declared persona non grata. They should have closed the New York consulate, which was involved in this activity. I know that this is a hard thing for any administration to do, so this is not a criticism, but I do believe that we need to start expelling a lot of Chinese diplomats who've been spying on the U.S., engaging in activities inconsistent with their diplomatic status.
Agreed. 100% agree. Gordon Chang, thanks so much for joining us. As always, always interested in hearing your opinions.
Thank you so much, Tony. I really appreciate it.
All right. Gordon Chang, you can follow him at Gordon G. Chang on Twitter. I agree with him. I think China is dangerous, and we've got in this administration, the first one that is since, you know, Richard Nixon made his trip to China, first one to stand firm against China. And I agree, we can do more, and we have to do more, especially on the issue of religious freedom, which I'm going to talk about with my next guest, Nuri Turkel, who also serves on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. He happens to be a Uyghur. He's a human rights lawyer representing a lot of these religious minorities. And what's happening with him in China. So we're going to talk about China's atrocious birth control policies that they're imposing, forced birth control, which includes sterilization and forced abortions. More information. I mean, it's like constant information coming out of China on their human rights abuses. We're going to talk about that and still more to come on this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. Going to be joined by Congressman Jim Banks talking about the Russia Russia putting targets on U.S. troops. We're going to talk about that next. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. Consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Absent fathers, distracted fathers, and angry fathers have created a vacuum of the soul in the lives of many children. Pornography is epidemic, affecting the male brain, isolating his heart, and degrading women who long to be cherished. Confusion and even skepticism about marriage run rampant, especially in our younger generations. Selfishness among men has led to broken homes and a trail littered with broken hearts, including their own. Where can you turn to find the solutions to these problems? Leadership in Love, A Tale of Two Fathers, is a new publication from Family Research Council that takes a look at two men, Joshua and the father of the prodigal son, as strong examples of leadership and love. It also weaves in an understanding of attachment science to underscore the needs of children, which need to be met to become emotionally healthy and spiritually strong. Visit frc.org/fathers to learn more.
In today's culture, it can be difficult for men to navigate what it means to be a man and to find clear models of masculinity and manhood. There are many competing ideas out there and even confusion around the basic concepts of gender and sex. Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join me at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate leaders who understand the issues of the day. These issues will invest in unpacking our role as defenders, providers, instructors, and battle buddies so that men can have generational influence as a chaplain inside and outside the home. Join us at one of our upcoming events in Texas, Louisiana, Florida, or Virginia. Learn more about Stand Courageous and find an event near you at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com. StandCourageous.com. All right, still to come on this edition of Washington Watch, we're going to be joined by South Carolina Congressman Ralph Norman. We're also going to be, as I mentioned on the way out, we're going to be talking to Indiana Congressman Jim Banks about the Russian bounties put on U.S. troops. We're going to be talking about that. But now, you know, we started talking about China's distaste for freedom and their actions against Hong Kong. But the atrocities of China, they certainly don't stop there. A new report, this is an AP report, shows that China is forcing birth control, in also in the form of abortions, forced abortion, forced sterilization on Uyghur women to curb the population in the Xinjiang region. The communist regime abuses against the group of Muslims is I mean, it's just we're saying we were just talking about it just a moment ago about the forced labor, they taking them around the country, using them. They're in these re-education camps, concentration camps, and now we've even heard of reports of organ harvesting. Now we're hearing these reports of forced abortions, forced sterilizations. Joining me now to talk about this is Nuri Turkle. He's a commissioner on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, also chairman of the board of the Uyghur Human Rights Project. Commissioner Turkle, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much, Tony.
I assume that this AP report is not a surprise to you.
No, not at all. The Uyghur people have been crying out loud for international support and asking for the international community, particularly those of us who are in the free societies, to pay attention to the Uyghur grievances in the last 20, 30 years. The forced abortion, sterilization issue was part of the Uyghur life from the very beginning. Much like here in the United States, the Uyghur people don't like the government to interfere with their private life, how many kids they conceive, and how to conceive, and how many kids that they would like to conceive. So this is for the Uyghur people. Uyghur people generally very conservative and traditional. It's between it's a spousal matter, personal choice, and also it's God's gift. So they have rejected this notion for a long time that the government is interfering, causing Uyghur women to suffer physical harm, and now it's psychological harm with the possible imprisonment in the concentration camps. So when you look at the actions as well as the policy objectives being imposed upon the Uyghur people by the Chinese Communist Party, it is evident that they wanted to get rid of this population that has centuries-old ethnic traditional life, culture, history, and contribution to the civilization.
So in this AP report, which is quite extensive, the forced birth control, injection of drugs and other devices into these women. They're also, as you mentioned, in these, they're imprisoned in some cases for having too many children. If they exceed the limit, they're imprisoned. Their children are taken away from them. This is, as you said, it is trying to eradicate an entire ethnic group, and the world is watching. And I'm grateful that we have an administration here in the United States that is bringing attention to this. But let me ask you, Commissioner Turkle, the plight of the Uyghurs, is it improving or do we see the conditions worsening?
The Uyghur people have been suffering as long as I have been breathing. Why do I say this? I was born in captivity at the height of the Cultural Revolution myself. My mother was taken in when she was about 6 months pregnant with me. I was born in the re-education camp and released several months afterwards. I grew up watching how brutal the communist regime has been to my people or the others. In the last 2 years, last 2-3 years in particular, the situation has gotten worse. The Chinese government has been using its diplomatic and economic influence around the world to buy out silence from countries, particularly in Europe, that's supposed to speak out, much like this administration has in the particularly since 2017. But the international community should not let the Chinese to test the conscience of the people who appreciates and loves freedom. I am personally very grateful that the Trump administration has been forceful, publicly, legislatively, and through the executive decision. Just to give you one example, back in 2018, Vice President Mike Pence delivered a speech on China and gave a paragraph for the Uyghur suffering. And Secretary Pompeo has been speaking out repeatedly and regularly on the atrocities being committed against Uyghur people. I call on the other countries, particularly traditional U.S. allies, to get on the right side of the history. And also I call on our government and others to revisit their relationship, economic and diplomatic relationship with communist China that is committing genocide in the daylight. It is simply unconscionable to go on business as usual.
Yeah, especially as we have more and more information that is coming out of China that details what is actually happening. We're almost out of time, Nuri, but one quick question. Are there other ethnic groups or religious groups that are also suffering under the communists there in China?
The Chinese Christian community deserves attention. The Uyghur Islam and Chinese Christian community have been targeted by the Chinese government as a Western religion. The Chinese government perceives Christians and Muslims in China as a disloyal group of people that threatens the Communist Party's existence and spread of their ideological methods.
Mm. Commissioner Turkle, I want to thank you for joining us today, and thank you for your continued work on behalf of religious freedom, including on behalf of the Uyghur people.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
All right. Nuri Turkle, he's a commissioner on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. I serve with him. He's a great guy. Glad to have him on the commission. All right, coming up next, Congressman Ralph Norman of South Carolina joins us to pose a question that about 60 members of Congress are asking. We're going to talk about it next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Do Christians have a biblical obligation to participate in government? Do Christians have a duty to vote? And if so, what principles should inform them while casting their ballots? How should pastors think about politics, and how can they shepherd their congregations well during an election season? The gospel of Jesus Christ has implications for all areas of our life, including politics. Christians must be prepared to grapple with the moral issues of our day, the reality of our two-party system, and follow our Christian convictions to their logical end by voting for candidates that support clear biblical values. Family Research Council has partnered with 21 state family policy councils for a new edition of Biblical Principles for Political Engagement. This booklet provides biblical wisdom and clear answers to pivotal questions to help you navigate the political landscape. This publication exists to facilitate careful thinking about issues and encourage God-honoring political engagement that filters all issues and candidates through a biblical worldview. To read the full publication, visit frc.org/engage.
Not so long ago, sex education in public schools involved learning about human growth and development and listening to advice on how to be careful, respect others, and save sex for marriage. Things are very different today. Parents have two main concerns about sex ed: that it sexualizes children and that it's loaded with LGBTQ indoctrination. Family Research Council has released a new resource to address this issue titled Sex Education in Public Schools: Sexualization of Children and LGBT Indoctrination. This resource reveals troubling examples of the agenda-driven content being pushed in modern sex ed and exposes the powerful organizations behind it all. Finally, it offers some action steps for parents to consider in their fight to protect the health and innocence of their children. For more information about sex education in public schools and to view this resource, visit frc.org/sexeducation. That's frc.org/sexeducation.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, you'll remember us talking about this a number of times a few years back. Then Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, she's now Senator Blackburn, she chaired a House Select Panel on Infant Lives. This is actually when the Republicans were in the majority. And this was looking into Planned Parenthood and their trafficking in baby body parts. Well, as a result of this extensive investigation, criminal referrals were made to the Department of Justice regarding some of these entities that were involved. What came of it? Well, that's a question about 60 members of Congress are asking. Joining me now to talk about this, Congressman Ralph Norman, who represents the 5th District of South Carolina. He led this congressional effort in communicating with the Department of Justice and asking the U.S. Attorney General for an update on this investigation into Planned Parenthood. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Glad to be here, Tony. Appreciate what you do.
Well, thank you, sir. Tell our listeners the details of this letter and what you're trying to find out.
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, Tony, what this involves is the trafficking of body parts that Planned Parenthood is selling, and it dates back to 2015. You had the Center for American Progress, who had released some undercover videos that exposed the sale of the fetal tissue. It was investigated by the House Select Investigative Panel on Infant Lives that Senator Blackburn was a part of, and it had the Senate Judiciary Committee. You had over 15 criminal referrals or cases sent to the DOJ to ask about how about investigating this. You had another request in 2016. In April of 2017, the Senate Judiciary Committee sent a follow-up letter to the DOJ and just saying, where are we? What's been done? On top of that, they've got records that show the director of the Dorothy Ferguson, who's the director of Planned Parenthood, Marmonte, which is a basically just Planned Parenthood, making a deal with STEM Express to buy fetal body parts. And it was they profited over $250,000. And what spurred all this was, and I'm a member of the caucus here that Chris Smith has on, you know, trying to stop this type of activity. But a video that the Center for American Progress did on May 26th of this year, which again was hadn't seen, but it's selling body parts. So all we're asking William Barr to do, the Attorney General, is to investigate this, give us an update, and see where we are with it. Because this dates back to 2015. And, Tony, get this. They applied, Planned Parenthood applied for $80 million of taxpayers' dollars in the CARES Act, which they qualified for, which is outrageous. You just don't have this kind of thing. So, anyway, that's why 66 congressmen signed on, and we're going to get some answers one way or another.
I would certainly think that under this Department administration that they would pay attention to this, and I think it is extremely egregious that here's an organization that already gets about $500 million a year in taxpayer money, cashing in for another $80 million under the Paycheck Protection Program while they're under investigation for the trafficking in human body parts. I mean, that's outrageous.
Well, not only is it outrageous, they have no shame. I hated to see the ruling that came down yesterday in Louisiana. You know, it's time to fight, and it's time to call these people out. And I think, thank God, I think William Barr will put this on the priority list. Again, it's been going on for the last 5 years. And I along with all the congressmen who signed this letter, we deserve some answers, and it needs to be a priority. And we need to know where we are, where we stand, and we're not going to quit until we find out.
Congressman, before I let you go, anything our listeners can do to help out?
Yeah, one thing I've learned from my time in being in Congress is the best activity that the voters can do is contact a congressman. If this doesn't get your blood pressure rolling or boiling, then call your congressman. I don't care who the congressman is. Call him and tell him this needs some answers and let their voices be heard.
All right. We appreciate you taking the lead on this, Congressman Norman, and thanks so much for joining us. And I look forward to an update from you when you hear back from the Attorney General.
Thank you so much. Appreciate
it. Congressman Ralph Norman of South Carolina, he represents the 5th District there. And hey, you heard the action item there. If you get a chance to contact your member of Congress, send him an email, make a phone call, and just ask him, what's the status on Planned Parenthood, the investigation into their trafficking in baby body parts? There were criminal referrals made about 4 years ago. This letter, signed by 66 members of Congress, going over to the Department of Justice. Just ask them, do you support finding out whether or not Planned Parenthood is going to be charged with a crime? All right, when we come back, reports that Russia has placed bounties on American soldiers in Afghanistan. The New York Times releasing intelligence, partial intelligence, on an ongoing investigation. One member of Congress says they now have blood on their hands. He joins us next. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Could you use some timely and original commentary to read this summer, specifically on the issues facing our culture today? FRCblog.com has just what you're looking for. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, members of the Family Research Council team, as well as outside contributors. You can learn about religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Check out this list of a few of our most recent titles. What does it mean to be a woman? D.C. Christians take to the streets to sing, lament, and pray, and prayerfully responding to civil unrest. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and stand for truth. Our blog helps you do just that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at frcblog.com. On April 16th, President Trump and the White House Coronavirus Task Force announced a three-phase plan with guidelines for how states can begin scaling back restrictions. Churches should begin putting in place plans to reopen and operate their ministries according to the guidance of the Centers for Disease Control as state officials begin lifting orders. Here at Family Research Council, we have summarized the White House three-phase plan and how it relates to in-person church meetings and gatherings. Check out our resource, What Pastors Should Know About the White House Plan to Open Up America Again. Our resource offers practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate safely as our country reopens. Visit frc.org/church guidelines to view this resource and learn more. There, you'll also find our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus. Again, that's frc.org/church guidelines.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, no doubt you've heard this because it's been all over the media. New York Times claiming the president was briefed, received an intelligence briefing regarding Russia placing bounties on American soldiers in Afghanistan, saying that, you know, the Taliban would get a little extra money if they would take out an American soldier. Well, you know, and they're alluding to the fact the president didn't do anything about it. He didn't care about American troops. I mean, it's any president, I don't care what party they come from, that would be outrageous, even to suggest it. I just can't imagine an American president not caring about American troops. Yesterday at the press briefing, Kayleigh McEnany was asked a question by one of the reporters. I've got a clip. I just want you to hear her response to a question about the president getting intelligence on this particular topic. Play the clip.
I know you said that President Trump was never briefed on these reports about the Russian bounties and whatnot, but can you say that he was briefed today?
Look, I'll say this, that the U.S. receives thousands of reports a day on intelligence, and they are subject to strict scrutiny. While the White House does not routinely comment on alleged intelligence or internal deliberations, the CIA director, NSA, National Security Advisor, and the chief of staff can all confirm that neither the president nor the vice president were briefed on the alleged Russian bounty intelligence.
So, you can believe the New York Times, or you can believe all of those responsible for making sure that the president gets the proper information. Look, there is so much happening in the world, and it has to go through filters, because if not, the president would be sitting there 24/7 listening to all of this information coming in. He would get nothing done. Well, joining me now to talk more about this, Indiana Congressman Jim Banks. He was actually briefed by the White House yesterday on the allegations. He represents the 3rd District of Indiana. He also serves on the House Armed Services Committee. He's a veteran who also served in Afghanistan. Congressman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Good to be with you again.
All right. You made the comment, and I don't disagree with it, but I want to give you a chance to explain it. You said that the New York Times has blood on their hands.
Well, this is this story that was published on Friday, Tony, is another despicable example of the New York Times' concerted effort to damage President Trump. And sadly, where the innocent bystanders in all this are affected are the intelligence community, who received this intelligence from sources in Afghanistan about these alleged bounties. They, by the way, the intelligence was never verified. Gina Haspel, the CIA director, Robert O'Brien, the national security advisor, the DNI, John Ratcliffe, they all said the intelligence was never verified. That's why career intelligence officials never took it to the president. That doesn't mean they fully dismissed it. It just means that it wasn't verified enough to take to the president. Here's my biggest complaint about all of this. Tony, as you know, I served in Afghanistan during the period of time when these bounties were allegedly in place. That means the bounty was on my head and on the heads of those I served with, especially when we were going outside of the wire and vehicle convoys on multiple occasions. And the fact that the New York Times published a story that included classified information brought to them by a leaker that was part of their concerted effort to destroy the president, it means that our career intelligence officers in the field will never be able to fully track down the truth. They're not going to be able to fully do their job, because now if it is true, the Russians are shredding all the evidence, mm-hmm. and they'll make sure that we never know the full truth about it. That at the end of the day, that this is the worst type of hit job on an American president by the New York Times, which is not a serious outlet of journalism any longer. Their hatred of President Trump, represented by those on their readership on the far left, it's absolutely sickening to me that they would publish this story and damage, if not fully make it impossible for the intelligence community to do their job and bring justice to a serious allegation and situation like what's been alleged with these bounties.
So what you're saying, Congressman, is that if the New York Times really cared about the issue of Russians putting bounties on U.S. soldiers, they would not have compromised the investigation by releasing classified information, which now ensures that investigation will not be able to go forward. And if this, in fact, was true, we'll never know.
Absolutely. And on top of that, Tony, the very fact that they would publish unverified classified information shows you that they're not a serious news outlet to begin with. I mean, that they didn't track down sources and verify it through proper channels. That tells you that all you need to know about the story that was in the New York Times on Friday, that it was a hit piece. But fast forward to today, on Tuesday, after a story that appeared on Friday, and it's getting awfully confusing for a lot of us. On Friday, Democrats in the New York Times were attacking the president and saying that he didn't know anything about that he knew about it, and he turned a blind eye because it was, you know, rehashing the Russian Trump collusion narrative, that Trump is cozy with Putin, and that's why he would ignore intelligence that the Russians put a bounty on the heads of U.S. service members like myself. So that was their narrative on Friday. Now on Tuesday, after they went to the White House and a few of them got briefed, now the narrative is, why didn't the president know about it? His top staff didn't brief him on it. So it's starting to get confusing as you sort of weave your way through this story, which again tells you everything you need to know. This is all a politically timed hit piece to damage the president as we get closer to the November election.
It is amazing. They'll stop at nothing to try to destroy the president. They're willing to destroy the country.
I couldn't agree more. And that's what's despicable about this. I don't know if the Democrats, I don't know if they get it yet, but eventually they will, that they're not really in this case, they're not really attacking the president. They're attacking the career men and women of the intelligence community who serve our country every day to keep us safe, because what they're saying is that they didn't do their job. And I think what a lot of us who learned in the briefing yesterday when we went to the White House to be briefed by Mark Meadows, the chief of staff, and top intelligence officials. What we walked away from that briefing understanding is that our men and women in the intelligence community absolutely did their job, and they were continuing to do their job by looking into these allegations, even though the sources weren't necessarily credible, and the claims weren't veritable. They were still doing their jobs to dig deeper into this to gain a better understanding. But this story, unfortunately, has disrupted their ability to do that.
The subject matter itself, the bounty that the allegation that the Russians put bounty on U.S. soldiers, from what you've seen and heard, do you believe that that could very well be true?
I think it very well could be, but I don't know. I mean, what we do know is that the Russians have been involved in malign activities in Afghanistan, siding with the Taliban. So there's no question that the Russians have offered assistance to the Taliban over time. But at the end of the day, we don't know if the bounty story is true. We probably never will at this point. But that's really beside the point of what the Democrats with the New York Times was alleging, and that the president turned a blind eye. I mean, what I can say is that this president has been tougher on Russia than any president of my lifetime, and I say that with Ronald Reagan on a pedestal. Still, this president has enacted tough sanctions against Russia. He hasn't turned a blind eye to Russian activities like Obama and Biden did during their administration when Russia invaded Crimea, sovereign territory of Ukraine, and they totally ignored it. This president recently banished 60 Russian intelligence officials out of our country. He shut down Russian consulates. He's enacted the toughest sanctions in a generation on Russia, not to mention giving Ukraine lethal weapons that Barack Obama refused to give Ukraine. Donald Trump did that. He single-handedly authorized giving Ukraine lethal weapons to fight back against the Russians. That's what Obama wouldn't do. Donald Trump did that. Donald Trump's record on holding Russia accountable far surpasses anything that you ever saw from Barack Obama or Joe Biden.
And that's not to mention the tremendous support he's given to our men and women in the military and helping to rebuild our nation's military after 8 years of neglect. Congressman, I want to thank you for joining us. As always, great to talk with you.
Thank you, Tony. Good to be with you.
All right. Jim Banks of Indiana. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. I want to shift now in our final few moments together. I want to shift to a U.S. Supreme Court decision that came out today, which is actually positive. It was to protect school choice and religious liberty. Joining me now to give the details of this ruling. And its significance to the country is the president of the Montana Family Foundation, Jeff Laslossy. And this case comes out of Montana. And so, Jeff, thanks so much for joining us today. And congratulations, because I know this bill actually goes back to something that the Policy Council did probably about a decade ago. You shepherded it through the legislature, this tax credit to allow parents to choose the education for their children. You fought it in court, and today you won. You've got to be elated.
Well, Tony, we're absolutely ecstatic. You know, this was an 11-year battle for us, and not only will the decision benefit Montana students, but the court ruled so broadly that we can strike religiously discriminatory language from the constitutions in 37 states.
Yeah, it's a reference to the Blaine Amendment, which goes back about 150 years almost. So this is a quite significant ruling. But here you are in Montana working to give the families their educational choice. It goes all the way to the Supreme Court. And as you said, now it has impacted the policies of states all across the nation. So what's the next step there in Montana? How long before parents actually see the results of this?
Well, we'll see those results immediately. Because of the language in the decision, the tax credit scholarship program that we had going in Montana is instantly reinstated, and so we can begin granting scholarships to kids again. But going forward, what this really does is it just throws the doors to school choice wide open in the state of Montana. The Blaine Amendment was the big roadblock, and Montana not only had a Blaine Amendment, which typically says that that states may not appropriate public funds to private religious schools, but Montana's said you may not appropriate those funds either directly or indirectly. And of course, the way the Montana courts interpreted that was, you know, indirect was so broad that it encompassed everything. So this was a huge win. The court rejected the Montana Supreme Court's reasoning at every turn. And it's just a great day for Montana students, parents, and taxpayers.
So the way this works is tax credit scholarship program where someone could make a contribution to the scholarship fund. They get a tax deduction. So that's kind of the indirect aspect of this. It wasn't direct government money, but it was the money that people get tax credits for giving it to the scholarship fund. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And the fact that the court was actually able to rule on the Blaine argument was sort of a fluke. We wrote that bill specifically to skirt Blaine because the court had already ruled in a similar case out of Arizona that tax credit scholarships were not public dollars because the money had never transferred to the public side. So there was no Blaine implication. And so that's the reason that we did a tax credit scholarship bill rather than a voucher or something else. When the Montana Supreme Court ruled, they specifically invoked the Blaine Amendment, and that's what set up this perfect challenge to Blaine Amendments across the United States.
Well, again, I know you are excited, and you should be, and I want to congratulate you on a job well done. And this is a lesson, I think, for people across the country. When you got a good idea, you work on it. It doesn't always happen overnight. You know, you
right.
sow, and sometimes the season of reaping comes a little bit longer than we would like. But the day has come. You've won, and the beneficiary will be the children, not only in Montana, but as you've pointed out, all across the country.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Jeff, thanks so much for joining us. And again, congratulations on a job well done.
All right, Tony. Thank you. And for all the good work that you do at the FRC.
I appreciate that. Jeff Laslofi, he is the president of the Montana Family Foundation. And it's been a number of years, but I've been up there with them on occasion. And there's a number. We've got about somewhere between 35 and 40 of these family policy councils. I started the one back in Louisiana some 20-some years ago. And they do what we do nationally, they do at the state level. And Jeff been there a long time. And this is just an example. You got to stick with it. You know, we cannot give up. You know, they could have – the first time they presented this to the legislature, didn't pass. Took them about 5 years to actually get it through the legislature. Then it gets tied up in court. It's a long process, but today success came. It's a lesson. We've got to keep standing, you know. We just cannot give in. All right, folks, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us today. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Lots of resources there for you. Until next time, guess what? I leave you with some encouraging words from the Apostle Paul. Where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, you know what? Just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.